it looks like there is so much we could get from these artifacts from the archives. The medicine bottle could have hardly been noticed during the period it existed, but now time has made it more valuable than before. Here's a similar object, which may not sound interesting, but has so much to tell us about the history of art and design at Stout. I'm Darshana Gopalakrishnan, and I will take you to Stout's historical timeline from the 1910s to 1930s through this object, the ruler. Let me first describe this artifact to you. It is an L-shaped ruler made of brass and wood from the 1920s. It is more commonly known as the Taylor Square. When you turn it on its back, you can see the markings on the wood that says Lufkin number 8132, made in USA. One of its sides is longer than the other, and it goes from 1 inch to 24 inch. The longer side also has markings for thirds, sixths, and twelfths. The shorter side of it measures from 1 inch to 14 inch and has markings for halves, fourths, eighths, and sixteenths. The brass corner brace connects the two wooden halves through four brass rivets. The markings on this ruler are still dark and clear. The Taylor Square was mainly used for pattern drafting on fabrics, but sometimes it also facilitated measuring customer dimensions, like assessing the drop of a shoulder. Simultaneous measurements of the arm heights and the thickness of the shoulder were also made possible with these rules. In pattern drafting, the right angle blade mainly helped to establish a reference line from which the other dimensions could be easily marked off.
That sounds pretty complicated for a ruler.
I know.
But it's a special ruler made for tailoring.
That's right.
Okay, got it.
The Lufkin Rule Company is the manufacturer of this Taylor Square. It was originally named as E.T. Lufkin Board and Log Rule Manufacturing Company after its founder, Edward Taylor Lufkin, and was founded in Cleveland, Ohio in 1885 and later moved to Saginaw, Michigan. It is even today one among the leading rule-making companies such as Stanley, Starrett, and Chapin Stephens. The company introduced steel measuring tapes in the 1890s. Although measuring tapes existed in England from 1868, the Lufkin Company was the first to have introduced it in the United States. England was in fact highly advanced in all kinds of measuring rules and tapes even before the other parts of the world came to know about it. Yet, the Lufkin Rule Company was known as the largest manufacturer of measuring tapes and rules in the world. Well, that doesn't tell us all about the company. There's one another interesting fact. Have you heard of the amazing story of measurement?
No.
Well, it is an advertisement booklet published by this company in the year 1949 that comically explains the history of measurement starting from the early hand measuring techniques of the Egyptians.
This is such a cool comic book, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, that's what it is, kind of a comic book of sorts, right?
Sure. And I'm sure not many companies in that period would have spent so much energy on doing such a booklet, which would educate people and also advertise for their own benefit.
Interesting.
Elmer Cecil Stoner was the artist for this booklet, and from all the facts that I have, it looks like he was the first African-American to have worked on comic books. Rule-making companies of the period produced three styles of Taylor Squares. The fixed style, which is the basic form in which the arms are divided only into inches, the fixed graduated style, like this one that we have found from the archives, and the folding style, which was introduced later. In 1919, Lufkin filed a patent for folding rule. Its history states that the spring joint folding wooden rule was one successful innovation and that it existed as a dominant measuring tool for all types of users. Takedown Taylor's squares, in which one of the two arms of the square could be disconnected from the other, were also available in market during this period. It was not uncommon for the tailors in the 18th to 19th century to go to their clients' place to measure them. Both the takedown and folding rule made it easy to be carried by these tailors, and hence it was more preferred.
So they come to your house to measure you?
That's right.
That would be great.
If I was born in the 18th century.
Right.
The folding rule could have possibly outmoded and succeeded this particular tailor square. The production of this particular type of wooden ruler ceased in the 1940s. But similar kinds of L-squares are being manufactured even today in steel rather than wood because of their advantages in marking out on fabric. It is just that they're not as widely used as before.
So they still use these in clothing design and tailoring?
Yeah.
What you're saying? Okay.
But they're made of steel.
Steel now.
Yep.
I got it.
So what was the story of this ruler at Stout? In the 1970s, the Harvey Hall was being cleared for renovation. Renovation was needed partly due to safety reasons, since some elements of the building structure were falling apart. Ken Haynes, who was then a professor in the clothing and textiles department, found this tailor's square lying under one of the sewing tables in an old classroom in the second floor of Harvey Hall. He thought it was outdated for use and hence brought it to the university archives. Did you know clothing and textile has been one of the oldest domestic art courses offered at the Stout Institute? The archives have a collection of photographs of these classes being offered in the Harvey Hall, and I was able to look at some of these photographs of the sewing rooms and home furnishing classrooms. It also has photographs of all the equipment the building had soon after it was completed. Of these, I found the sewing tables most impressive. They were designed without pattern by Lorenzo Dauhave, who served as the president of Stout Institute from 1908 to 1922. He was one important member, not just in Stout's history, but in the history of art and design school, because during his service at Stout, he did all that was needed to promote all those art-related courses, and he tried to provide the maximum amenities for the home economics students. It was surprising to know that art and design existed right from the beginning of the Stout Manual Training School, and it was just a matter of organizing and reorganizing over the years until art and design became known to us as a distinguished department, which happened mostly around this period to which the ruler dates back. When the Stout Manual Training School began in 1891, manual training courses such as woodworking and domestic science courses such as dressmaking were the only two sets of courses offered.
What do you think they did with all the wardrobe that they created?
With the wardrobe?
You mean like
the equipment?
The dresses and the clothing that they designed.
Well, I still wanted to know what happened to those sewing tables.
Yeah.
Because they were really good designs, I think. In 1911, the domestic science course was grouped into domestic economy department, homemakers department, and trades department, of which the domestic economy department and homemakers department were combined in 1912 to be called as the home economics department. From then, all the studio art, interior decoration, art history, clothing and textile courses were being offered under the home economics department until late 1960s, when art was designated as a separate department. Well, I hope that explains the path of art and design from the home economics department to some extent, and I'm sure Shane has many more interesting facts to tell you about the actual birth of art and design department at Stout. It definitely makes me happy to think that I belong to a department that has been blended with Stout's history. If you're still wondering how all that information relates us to the history of art and design at Stout, well, here's the answer. The ruler relates us to the history of art and design department only through the Harvey Hall. This building, with all its advanced amenities, remained as the proud icon of Stout in its period and also a main reason for the growth of this art and design school that we are part of today. Except for the industrial arts, I would say most of the art and design courses that we have today were born from the home economics department, which was housed in the Harvey Hall. In 1911, when the Stout Institute was taken over by the state of Wisconsin, a large sum of money was appropriated for new buildings and better facilities. With that sum, the Trades Building and the Home Economics Building were erected. The Harvey Hall alone was built at an expense of $250,000, along with all advanced equipment to facilitate 500 students. It was described as one of the best arranged and best equipped home economics schools in the United States. Soon after the Harvey Hall was erected, almost all the home economics classes, including clothing and textiles, home decoration, and cookery classes, were offered in that new building. As Nicole mentioned earlier, it was initially called as the Home Economics Building. Soon after the death of Harvey in 1922, only the center room in the main corridor of the Harvey Hall was dedicated to him and was called as the L.D. Harvey Memorial. Later, with more additions to the campus, the building as a whole was renamed as Harvey Hall. This four-story building had 112 rooms. The auditorium and library was located on the first floor, the cafeteria lunchroom in the basement, clothing and textile department was on the second floor, and the home furnishing and home decoration, which was supposed to be the first official art courses, was on the third floor. The locker rooms and practice cottage for homemakers department were seen as the valuable additions to the building. Harvey Hall was thus the home of home economics department from 1915 until the 1970s, and it played an important role in the growth of art and design at Stout. It is interesting how a ruler could take us back in time and give us so much information. Stout, from the very beginning, has been highly proud in showcasing its art and design-related courses, although it was not called as art and design course officially. Shortly, Drew will introduce us to his artifact, which I hope will be another proof of this fact. I'm Darshana Gopalakrishnan. Thanks for staying tuned with me.